The NFL Draft is finally here, and in Episode 2 of Agent Confidential Podcast, myself and Agent Jim Chapman take a look at the week leading up to the draft, what it's like for prospects, but more importantly, what some NFL teams are trying to do to skirt the coronavirus rules.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, I'm excited. It's draft week, finally, and man, we've been living in these strange times where we need something to get excited about. I mean, from your perspective, it has to be exciting to finally be here, to finally be in the week where we're going to get this draft thing going, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of weeks of Coronaville, you know. It's nice to have something to look forward to that's live, you know. I know you watch a lot of TVG, live horse racing, but I'm not into that. I'm a more of a traditional football, basketball, baseball guy. It certainly is nice to have some live content where, we all love NFL football, and I know that's why the NFL is doing the draft now, because it's them on the stage and them only. So, yes.
You know, I know a lot of people have had a problem. I think the moral police is out there for this one, saying, oh, the NFL shouldn't be doing this because of, you know, the coronavirus and everybody's sequestered. But, you know, like, in my opinion, I think it's the perfect time for the NFL draft. I think the NFL draft is going to get seen by people who may not normally watch the NFL draft just because they're craving that sports and they want to see something out there. So I don't have a problem with the NFL going and doing their draft at this point in time, because I think it gives us the break that we ultimately need from all this crap.
Well, I mean, you know, just like with your radio program in the morning, I mean, you know, you're doing it from your home. They're doing it from their home. You know, Roger Goodell, who makes $45 million a year, is literally going to be doing this draft from his basement, you know. And I also think, and I'm a big believer, that, you know, the people that I've talked to over the last X amount of years, they're going to use this as an opportunity to create new platforms. You know, new technology, new ways of presenting not only the draft, but the combine, as well as even the games being played, you know, and it just gives them a reason to put money into it and create new platforms.
Yeah, and I think ultimately new is good. I know people always kind of shy away from new and think, oh, no, I don't want to try something new, and especially from the baseball side of things. Like, baseball people hate to do anything that would possibly be new. But I think the NFL is embracing this. And I think this may be better for the draft to have it done this way, because you're not overthinking at this point in time. Like, you don't have 500 prospects on the board or whatever. You've reduced the amount of guys you're looking at. I think teams are going to have probably a better draft this time around.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, baseball, you know, when we were growing up in the 80s and early 90s, I mean, they had a stronghold on the American heartstrings. And, you know, now it's the NFL, because they can adapt. It's just like business in corporate America. I mean, if you can learn to adapt, you're going to survive and continue to prosper. If you just stay in the status quo, you tend to fall behind. And the NFL has always been able to adapt. I mean, you know, you're going to see all kinds of different platforms. I was reading today, I mean, people can't wait to have these games played in the NFL without fans in the stadiums, because they can do live gambling with their new platforms. They can create Matt Burke, who used to be the center in the NFL, a Harvard graduate. I mean, he's a part of a group that's creating some virtual reality type stuff within the game to create new content, you know. I mean, this is, you know, where there's money, people, they always are finding ways to create new spins on stuff to, you know, even in bad times, you know. You know, it's just like the corporate America, the money people in this country. Yeah, they're sad, people are dying, and they're probably donating their money and time, but they're also making a ton of money by the market being, you know, down, the housing market, you know, zero interest, you know, I mean, zero, you know, I mean, it's just, it's kind of the Wild West. And, yeah, and someone will come out with a platform that will revolutionize the NFL, Major League Baseball, and all professional sports leagues.
Well, what have you heard from people about how they're going to take what we're going through right now and use that to their advantage potentially in the NFL?
You mean on the money side, or just X's and O's?
Everything, man, everything.
Well, like I said, in the money side of it, I mean, Ted Leonis, Wizards, the WNBA team in the DC area, He owned the Arena League for a while, last till it folded. He bought the Arena League for one reason and one reason only. It wasn't for the guys playing. It wasn't for the coaches. It wasn't for guys to use that to get to the next level. It was to be able to use that platform that he developed, spent millions and millions of dollars on. The Alliance tried to do it as well, live gambling. Joe Blow quarterback, you know, is he going to do a three-step drop? Is he going to do a five-step drop? Is he going to throw a pass to the tight end? You know, whatever. I mean, it's just constant gambling interface. And, you know, Ted Leonis bought the Arena League because he wanted to use that to, turn it into basically live gambling, and he wanted to use the software he spent millions and millions of dollars developing as a test dummy was the Arena League. The other piece of it is that I think, scouting departments are going to be probably, you know, if the power, like the owners of teams are going to look back and say, hey, do we really need a scout for every region? I mean, can we make this thing more streamlined? Because these scouts haven't even been on the road. The guys that are evaluating players as we speak, from the Tuas to, you know, the undrafted rookie, these are some of the old scouts that either got fired or retired that are going out and getting these numbers. They're either paying these individual scouts to do the work, or they're just good guys and they're going out there, love being around the game, and they're collecting numbers for organizations. And, it's definitely been an odd situation.
So the organizations are getting around some of this stuff by having people that they don't no longer employ. They're going out there and they're basically selling and not selling, but going out there and talking to the prospects kind of behind the scenes, where if they worked for an organization, they couldn't do that.
Well, actually, there's an individual guy in St. Louis that he played in the NFL. He, was an executive in the NFL, and then he got into the agent business. And he's, you know, he owns a matter of fact, he's a part of the ownership group that bought the old Rams facility there in Earth City. And I mean, he's been going out and testing players, and I know him, he's probably getting paid to do it, but, but it really has helped out the small guy, because at the end of the day, the NFL business model is, if, you know, you don't get a physical, you're not going to get drafted. So all these players, small college guys that would have had great pro day numbers, they're not getting physicals because of the coronavirus, and or wouldn't even have numbers. So, I mean, there's going to be so many small college players, undrafted guys, that are not going to get signed because of corona.
Yeah, you know? That's crazy. I mean, coronavirus is obviously going to affect everything when it leads up to this draft. The big guy's not going to be affected, the Tuas, the Joe Burrow of the world, and guys like that. But you're talking about the fifth round, the sixth round, the seventh round guys.
No doubt.
The guys like let's use Tyreek Hill as an example, a fifth round guy from Western Alabama or wherever he went to college. You know, guys like that have made an impact on this league. You're probably not going to see those guys drafted. They'll be out there maybe as undrafted free agents that you'll take a flyer on. But we may see some talented players not get picked up.
I think what will happen is the West Alabamas, the Fort Hays States, the Pittsburgh States, the Northwest Missouris that we're all familiar with in the Midwest, those guys are going to be brought in as minicamp workout guys, or if they're lucky, you know, a priority on draft is where they'll get a little bit of signing bonus money. But, you know, I think the traditional GM scouting director, they have so much body of work and in front of, you know, comparable talent, you know, high level talent. So it makes that decision a little bit easier to make than taking a flyer on a kid from, once again, like Fort Hays State, you know.
Yeah. So how is the week for your guys, your prospects in a normal situation compared to what's going on right now? Like, let's look back at last year's draft versus this year's draft. How are your guys going into it different this year than they were maybe a year ago?
Well, once again, it's, you know, a little bit of the fear of the unknown. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, don't have numbers. Some do, obviously, through the combine. But, you know, it really is going to come down for some of the lower level guys to really have gotten lucky to be close proximity to these scouts that are actually working players out. either through a courtesy or, you know, so yeah, there's a lot of fear of the unknown. I mean, and it's, you know, I mean, also, you know, a lot of these guys make these teams or get on the 53 or not the 53 man, but on, you know, the training camp rosters, you know, through their rookie mini camp. Well, how's that going to look? You know, that's the biggest piece of it for a lot of these, you know, lower tier guys or guys, the lower tier guys that I have. So
do you think we'll see this year maybe, and really going forward as well, do you think we'll see it like basically a year of lost talent in the NFL where it's not going to get back to where we need it to be from a young talented standpoint until next year because of not having these rookie mini camps and whatnot?
Two positions that I think it's always hard to evaluate and define in the NFL. That's why the XFL, the Alliance, were good for football, is the quarterback position and O-line. You know, having the true evaluation process all the way through, you know, some of these O-linemen, they're going to take guys, you know, from big schools that might not have been as talented versus the Ali Marpets from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that play D3 football that have been starter from day one and are making huge dollars. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there that fit the bill in small college football that are going to get overlooked and are going to have to fight and claw and scratch to you know, to make it. I mean, get a shot. I mean, even to get into rookie minicamp.
If there is a rookie mini camp this year.
If there is a rookie mini camp. I mean, I really believe that rookie mini camp will not be – you know, you got to realize the rookie mini camps, since I've been in this thing in early 2000s, you know, each team – you know, some teams would have it, you know, the weekend app. They're going to have to do it virtually. It's all going to be mental reps, not physical reps.
Yeah, and that does no good for anybody because a lot of guys, and I know in particular me, probably you as well, probably not so good with the mental side of things, but if we can get out there and show what we got and give somebody the opportunity to watch us and to see what we can do on the field, you can make a big impact that way. I mean, sure. Whether it's your speed or your strength or something like that.
Sure.
So I just get a feeling like a lot of these guys that we look at now, like looking at the Chiefs, for example, like a guy like Mike Pinnell or somebody like that, that, you know, you probably don't think of as a player that you have to have, turned out to be a player that you did need to have. That guy got an opportunity. That guy got chance to go
Mike
out there and
Pinnell,
perform.
You know, I mean, that once again, there's a guy that went to Colorado Pueblo, you know, D2 school and dominated and, you know, was pretty good with the Packers and some other teams. And, I mean, he's had to fight his way the whole career. Yeah, he's gotten a couple paydays, but, you know, he's had to fight all the way through. And there's going to be a lot of guys now that the XFL, potentially the CFL, it might not play. There's going to be a huge list of what they call street free agents that are going to be sitting in their local gym working out until they get that call. It's definitely the wild, wild west when it comes to that. I mean, in the agent business, I mean, the best agents that I've ever met, unless you're, you know, dealing with first, second round picks every pick, like a Tom Condon, you know, former Kansas City guy, you know, the guys that know how to be able to analyze the draft, I mean, the rosters, being able to place their player in a position to make a team. You know, a lot of agents go for signing bonuses, the $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, $20,000 signing bonuses. Well, I always told my guys, do you want to make, you know, $12,000 to $15,000 on a signing bonus and get cut, or do you want to make the league minimum, you know, $455,000, $25,000 a year? Who cares about that signing bonus of $10,000? Let's put you in the best place to make the team. And if you don't know your rosters as an agent or someone involved in this process, your guys are going to probably get cut.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be able to know where to put your guys to be successful, especially in the landscape that we're in today.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're focused on this draft so much, but next year's draft may not result in anybody getting picked up or any good players coming out because we may not have a college football season. And so at least for this draft, we've got kind of a blueprint we can go by. We can look back at those college games. Hell, this year we may not have college football. We may not be able to look at anybody and even, maybe not even have a draft going into next season.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I was speaking to you earlier off the record a little bit. You know, you're starting to see even small college guys in the 1AA ranks, leaving college early because of what once again, the fear of the unknown, and taking their risk and going to Canada. Would have started talking to 2021 guys, you know, because, hey, why not? You know, if we got to pay them a little more, take care of them, do what they do in the Major League Baseball draft, you know, a lot of these guys in the Major League Baseball draft, they will give those guys, they will put it in their contract that they will pay for their college. You know, if I was a kid and I was playing baseball and I was going to get drafted by, you know, the Kansas City Royals, but I was going to be like a 10th or 12th or 15th round pick, I would say, hey, yeah, I want my signing bonus, but I also want you to pay for my college too. You know, so if I never play an inning for the Kansas City Royals, you know, and I only make it to, you know, Arkansas or whatever, you know, I can go back to my local college and get my degree. You know, the XFL probably would have done that.
Yeah.
You know, and invested in those players. And then we would have seen the Wild Wild West. It would have been like the AFL versus the NFL back in the 60s, because that's what they were doing too.
Yeah, but I ultimately feel like when we look at what's going on right now with coronavirus, with all of this stuff that, you know, is happening in this world today, I'm looking at football as the sport that could be affected the most, because they don't have that minor league system now. And if college doesn't play, then they definitely lose that minor league system. I would get to the point, I know it's very costly, but why not look at having, you know, larger practice squads, larger rosters, or maybe even some sort of minor league program where you don't have to rely on college? Because getting college started back up is going to be absolutely almost impossible this year, because you can't get anybody on campus. So if I'm the NFL, why am I relying on college football now to be my minor league system? Because we're at a point now where I don't know that you can rely on college football to be your feeder system anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the other thing about football, no matter if it's high school, college, or the NFL, you know, football is a game of repetition and reps. And, you know, you can't just start this up, you know, just like you can with baseball and even NHL, because these guys' bodies got to be in a certain shape to be able to take punishment, you know. So that's a big key, too. The NFL, I'm sure, is trying to figure out a way to do it. Obviously colleges too, major division one. But that's a good point. I mean, I don't know. I think that they're going to have to expand the practice roster. I think they're going to also, you know, have to figure something out about expanding the rosters totally throughout the league, not just the practice squad. Because guys are going to get injured. Unfortunately, one reason why we have this program, Agent Confidential, is, you know, not all players are the guys that are on the Wheaties box. You know, some of these guys are in the strip clubs, hanging out, partying, sitting in their, you know, their $700,000 house, you know, playing video games and eating pizza rolls. They're not all J.J. Watt, you know, going out there training in 32-degree weather in Wisconsin. You know, and these guys are going to be massively out of shape, a lot of them. And there's going to be a lot of injuries. I mean, think about when we saw, you know, them cut down training camp time and OTAs in the NFL, the last CBA in 2011. I mean, we had unbelievable amounts of ACLs. It's just started lately to be able to subside a little bit. But you're going to see a lot of massive injuries, Achilles, ACLs, groins, including broken bones, because guys aren't prepared. I mean, college kids, there's going to be tons of injury at college. That's why guys are going to probably really think about getting some insurance, the high-level guys, the Justin Fields of the world. They're going to get massive insurance from Lloyd's of London and whoever else does all that.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because we were, you know, talking about earlier last week on the show with Channing Crowder saying he expects like 50% of the NFL players to come back out of shape. And that really, like, that struck a chord with me. Like, that's your job, to be in shape, regardless of what happens, regardless of where you are. Are you serious about your career? 50% of the NFL could potentially come back out of shape. I mean, screw off, man. If you come back out of shape, I'm cutting your ass.
Well, at the end of the day, too, I mean, you know, like Jamal Adams, you know, one of the best players in the NFL, playing in the biggest media market in the world. I mean, and he's a great player, but he's also a prima donna. I mean, he told the Jets, I'm not doing your virtual reality off-season program. I want more money. And I'm not – they're not even doing the – they're paying him millions of dollars. So he doesn't even want to do the virtual stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a lot of guys. Now, it's voluntary, but we all know in the NFL what voluntary means. You need to be there. So, especially if you're a low-tier guy. And, you know, so, I mean, here you are. What are you doing with your time for 2 hours? You can't come to a virtual a Zoom meeting. I didn't like the mental stuff as much. I love lifting weights and getting in there and being aggressive with my teammates. But a lot of guys don't like lifting weights at all, especially the receivers and the DBs. They hate it. You know, and those guys right there are the thoroughbreds of the league. And if they're not in shape, I mean, you're right. They're probably going to have to cut them.
Yeah, and I wouldn't hesitate to cut them because, you know, this is the time, too, where we're all doing things we don't want to be doing right now. It's not just affecting certain people. It's affecting the entire world. And everybody is making adjustments. Everybody is changing the way that they live life. Everybody's changing the way that they operate and do their job. I just don't have the patience for a prima donna athlete to tell me, oh, I'm not going to play or I'm not going to work out, because I'm like, what else you got to do, man? Like, it's not like you can go out and do other things. You know, bars aren't open. Restaurants aren't open. Movie theaters aren't open. Events aren't open. You got nothing else to do. These guys should be coming back in the best shape of their lives.
Yeah. It's a mentality thing. I think at the end of the day, you know, if I was making, you know, even if I was making league minimum on a three, you know, a minimum deal on the fourth year of my career, which is a substantial amount of money, I would be paying someone, you know, even if I had a trainer from LA or whatever, down in Miami, you know, I would be doing it virtually. I mean, these guys have all the money and the technology, and even the teams, you know, certain players in this league, the league will even set it up. You know, you need the equipment, you need a freaking liquid vision to have. I mean, you're right. Some of these guys could turn into almost like prison training, you know, a prison mentality.
Yeah.
You know, you got it. You know, athletes, pro, college, high school, doesn't matter if it's lacrosse, football, soccer, you create scenario, at least the scenarios in your head to make yourself motivate yourself. Well, this is the ultimate, you know, being quarantined and being locked in and obviously not knowing if you're going to have a financial future, you know, either through you're not in shape or the league isn't playing or whatever. So I agree. I mean, even Mike Greenberg just shook his head when, you know, Jamal Adams says he wants money in the same breath says, I'm not coming to virtual reality, you know, voluntary freaking mini camp through videos or whatever, you know, like, I mean, it's insanity.
It really is. And I don't think the average, you know, fan is going to have the patience for the holdout. Like Dak Prescott down in Dallas right now, man, you want to be the leader of the Dallas Cowboys. That's essentially being the leader of the NFL, that Dallas Cowboy quarterback position. And if you're being a bag and having parties and doing the stuff that you shouldn't be doing and wanting to hold out through all of this, through, you know, through virtual, non-virtual training, if you want to call it that, like, I can't pay you either. Like, in my opinion, I look at a guy like a Dak Prescott, and I say, I'm not paying you, man. I'm just not. I don't think Dak Prescott, to me, is worth the investment because he's not what I need in a quarterback right now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And, you know, that's why Ezekiel Elliott went through the whole process of holding out, because I don't think Jerry Jones, you know, he's made a lot of stupid decisions. He made dumb decisions in college. And I mean, his dad, Ezekiel, its dad's even in trouble for some stupid stuff he did in Ohio. Almost like a Tiger King thing he had going on in Ohio. That's another story for another day, but I agree. I think that's also why Dallas will never win anything anytime soon. They just don't have those kind of leaders. They have a lot of prima donnas and a lot of guys that want to look good in their pads. But they don't have those guys that are going to be those dogs. You know, you got to have dogs to win in this league. That's just the way the NFL's always been built.
So how are guys, do you think, like Travis Kelce or anybody, like you're playing in an NFL stadium this year, are guys going to – are we going to have celebrations? Are we going to have dances? Are we going to have all kinds of the stuff that we normally see during a football game? I mean, it's going to be odd to watch an NFL game this year, isn't it?
Well, you know, I think it's going to be, you know, almost like an early pregame type situation where, You know, they're going to pump crowd, you know, they're going to pump some music up. Obviously not during the plays, but, you know, during, you know, the off time of the game. Maybe even pump some crowd music in, or pump some crowd noise into it to a certain decibel level. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Football is such a game of emotion that I don't know how a guy like Kelce or a guy, you know, like that caliber, even his brother, you know, plays off emotion and you know, some shenanigans. You know, I don't know how that looks. I guess it'd be like you and I at the club dancing. You know, I mean, it would be awkward.
Yeah, I think it is going to be awkward. And again, back to college too. I mean, you deal with a lot of college coaches. You deal with a lot of college folks right now. What are they thinking, man? Like, what are they saying behind the scenes about what they're expecting for their season?
College. Yeah, I mean, college has been a little bit – they've got a little bit of a jump start, you know, on this because there's no governing body. Yeah, the NCAA is a governing body, but it really isn't at the major college football level. The universities dictate a lot of that. Obviously, you can't pay players. You can't do this. But when it comes to having a Zoom meeting with your wide receivers, I mean, they're not, you know, busting your chops about that. I've had clients – you know, the University of Arizona that are, you know, been meeting for a long time. They have like two Zoom meetings a week, an hour long. Then there's some guys that are meeting every single day, 2 hours a day. You know, some leagues have already passed. The NCAA just passed. I think they can have up to 8 hours a week, you know, virtually, you know. That's, you know, 20-year-olds, you know, that have the attention span from – you know, TikTok to, you know, all the other platforms in this world. And then, you know, they're trying to be athletes at a high level and they're not getting paid. So, and, you know, the other interesting piece of it is I've talked to a lot of small college coaches. A lot of these players don't have internet at their homes. They're poor. You know, they don't have a $1,200 laptop. You know, they're poor, you know, you know, there's a lot of things. Some schools are keeping their kids in house, and they're doing the Corona meals. I mean, like they're having a sanitized worker come in, hand them these meals, and they're eating in the dorm. Some of these guys are being housed in the universities because they don't have anywhere to go. They have, and that's a big problem too. A lot of these kids don't have anywhere to go. The Johnny and Susie at KU, you know, their parents have money. And they can. It doesn't matter if it's white or black. You know, some of these kids just don't have anything, and you know, they can go home to the greatest internet connection. These kids don't have it, and it's a big problem right now, especially for the small colleges, because these kids, and we're talking about academia too, where you know these kids, you know, they want to keep them in house because and not leave them, you know, go back home because they would flunk out because they don't have the tools to be able to do these virtual classes.
So do you think college plays in the fall? Do you think they play in the spring? Do you think we just wipe out the whole season? Like, what do you think ultimately is going to be with college football this year?
College football, there's a very strong possibility it doesn't play because it's going to be a push-pull between academia, the presidents of these universities that are, you know, typically liberal people that, you know, they're going to do everything PC and they're going to follow it by the law. And then you got kind of the rogue athletic departments that are a little bit more type A. You know, when you're in a state like Ohio, you know, football is religion. You know, Ohio State is religion. You go down to Florida, it's religion. Here in Kansas and Missouri, it's not so religion. You know, so people won't miss it as much. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, if students are not allowed on campus, there will not be football in the college ranks. But they will play probably in the spring. They'll just replace spring football with a season. You know, will that be awkward? Yeah. I mean, then how does that trickle down to the evaluation process with the NFL? So it's a snowball effect for sure. You know, I don't know how I'd feel about college football in the spring. I mean, the weather would be nice all the way through. Mm-hmm. So who knows? Maybe the fandom would be even more because I don't know about you, but there's a lot of women and men that don't like going to those games when they're 12 below or 15 below. You know, I don't think they can scrap it, you know, because of the loss of March Madness. spring sports, College World Series. I don't think they can scrap it. I mean, the numbers are $4 billion in Division I major college football that would be lost. $75 million in the college football playoff type schools, Ohio State's, you know, schools like that. So
I could look at a spring college football season and kind of get behind that. I think that would be kind of fun. People are always looking for a spring league anyway. So
right.
If you do college in the spring, it doesn't compete with the NFL. But the problem then becomes there's no downtime for the guys to get ready for the draft and to get their bodies back, I guess, to be able to play football again right away in the fall. And that seems to be the only kind of like, you know, wall in the way, if you will, of having maybe spring college football for good.
Who knows? It's all fluid. Who knows? Maybe we get a vaccine. I mean, I know there's some companies like Gilead that, you know, that are working on a vaccine that's had a lot of success. They seem very happy about so far, and very promising. But, you know, all the red tape that we have in this federal government, you know, to get things passed through the FDA and everything, hopefully they can expedite it. We can get moving on with our lives.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. As we always do at the end, we wrap with a great story, and it is draft week, and the draft will be here before we know it. What's your best draft day story?
Well, the best draft story that I have was in 2007. We had a young man who was a phenomenal, phenomenal talent, about 6'4", about 270, ran 4.640, tight end out of a Division I school in Ohio. I won't say the school, but my business partner at the time, a typical attorney, and we flew to Los Angeles and had a draft day party with this player. Well, he ended up slipping in the draft a little bit farther down. He had some off-the-field issues. Well, it was me, my partner, his mom, his dad, and his whole slew of all of his relatives. As the draft got longer and longer into it, and he was no longer going to be picked up in those rounds, it started looking like he was going to go undrafted. His dad continued to get drunker and drunker and drunker throughout the day, even doing some illegal drugs. His dad was a known felon and was not a good guy. And he, you know, he's putting his arm around me. He's like, yeah, is my son going to get drafted or what? And my partner was just sweating bullets. He goes, these guys are going to kill us if he doesn't get drafted. And, I mean, these guys were inebriated, drunk, and high. And we're down to Mr. Irrelevant. And the Detroit Lions call me, Martin Mayhew and Matt Millen and Sheldon White. And they're like, we're going to take your guy as Mr. Irrelevant. You know, he's going to get to do the Disneyland deal. And, you know, his dad, they were, this is a true story. They're out there shooting guns in the backyard. And we're like, you know, freaking out because we're like, these guys are going to end up killing us if this kid doesn't get picked up, you know. And the mom's yelling at my partner, why, what happened, da, 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 da. So Mr. Irrelevant comes up, the older gentleman back in the day that used to call it, and they ended up calling Ramsey Robinson, who was from Alabama, and he ended up playing a couple years, but it was ironically for the Lions. My client ended up going to the Lions and actually starting two seasons for them. And but, you know, the story really is that, you know, we didn't have draft parties after that with clients because you just never know what's going to happen. And, you know, this family was very much out of control, drinking and partying. Decided after that we were no longer going to have draft parties. I mean, because you just can never tell and you can never, you know, determine what's going to happen, you know, in this draft or any draft.
You made it out alive.
We made it out alive. And, you know, his dad never really forgave us for him not getting drafted in the third or fourth round, even though it wasn't our fault. And, you know, at the end of the day, once again, we just decided to kind of revamp our draft deal. We didn't go on location anymore with the team or with the individual player. You know, we kind of did our own draft thing within our office. So, but yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of characters and individuals in this business, including parents.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that behind-the-scenes look about what it takes to get ready for the NFL draft, what some teams are doing to kind of get by the rules, and what one draft day story meant for Jim and his partner. Drafting and being an agent may not be all that it's cracked up to be.